we were going to talk about the 40th anniversary of landing on the moon. As a broadcast journalist, you had to be behind the scenes and in front of the camera. What was going on in the studio?
Well, actually, there was a thing called radio back in those days.
Oh, yes.
And so I wasn't in front of the camera.
Oh, well, okay.
I was Merrill Muller. I don't know if you remember him. Red Muller used to do the news on the Today Show. Dave Garraway was hosting the Today Show way back before your time.
Before color television.
And, oh, yeah, it was well before color television. And Red, as he was known, Merrill Muller, eventually made his way over to ABC. And in 1965, I believe, or maybe 64, Merrill and I were named as the space team for ABC Radio Networks. And Jules Bergman was the television anchor mm-hmm. for ABC. And we would go down to the Cape and get a couple of rooms at the Holiday Inn and set up a network newsroom about a week before each launch. I had the privilege of being there for everything from Gemini 3 through Apollo 12.
Wow.
So I spent a lot of time going down covering those space launches and had a chance to get acquainted with the astronauts. I have some wonderful photographs of me in the swimming pool at the Holiday Inn with Alan Shepard and Frank Borman and Wally Schirra and Jim Lovell, a lot of these guys.
Geez.
In fact, when they were all here at Oshkosh for the reunion several years ago, it was right after Apollo 13 had come out, I knew they were going to be here. In fact, Tom Pobrezny had asked me to host the news conference that they had out in Aeroshell Plaza. I think it was called something else at that time.
It used to be called West Ramp.
Yep, that was it. And I brought all those old pictures out and got the guys to sign them.
Oh, nice.
And so I have that. And I have a commemorative album that ABC put out. Do you remember vinyl discs?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Still have some.
Of course
I
you
still
do.
Have some.
33 and a third.
Yep.
Well, they put all of the highlights of all of our coverage from radio on a vinyl disc. And then I narrated, you know, put it all together. And it's a picture album that has pictures of the Collins and Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. So I got all three of them to sign their picture in that book. And this
nice.
Is a real keepsake that
I
value highly. I won't even tell you where it is.
Uh-oh.
An unnamed source.
It's in a safe somewhere
right,
with an armed
location.
Guard.
But those were wonderful days. And, of course, Apollo 11, I remember very, very well being at a little restaurant that morning, the day that Apollo 11 left, with Walter Cronkite and David Brinkley and everybody sitting around having coffee and getting all geared up and ready for the big day. And it may be hard, if not impossible, for young people today who take space travel for granted, you know, the space shuttle, the moon flights, yeah, that's all been done. But for those of us in that particular year, in that particular setting, just to contemplate, we're actually going to send somebody up to the moon. It was exciting, it was exhilarating, and it was scary.
Yes, it was.
It was very scary because you looked at that little limb, the lunar excursion module that was going to land on the moon, and the technology. And, of course, we weren't nearly as advanced as far along in electronics and computers then as we are now, 40 years ago.
Yeah, they have said that your average cell phone has more computer power than the computers used on the in the service module, not the service module, but the command module and the LEM. Which is kind of scary.
I heard a futurist, one of these people who talks about technology.
Yeah, what
and
will
where
be?
We've come. Yeah, and he made an interesting observation. He said one of these greeting cards that you open up and it sings, you know, these musical greeting
mm-hmm,
cards,
mm-hmm.
has more raw computing power than existed in the world in 1950.
Oh, geez,
oh, yes.
that's scary how technology has come along. Well, you know, the other thing that was interesting too about Apollo 11 is that we were still fresh in our mind was the accident with Apollo 1.
Yes.
Because, you know, the Russians had several problems with their stuff, but nobody knew about it. And our space programmers right up front. And I can remember one of the Gemini launches. They had her lit, and mm-hmm. she shut down on them. And everybody's, whoa, panic time. And it was a plug of some kind, either unplugged or not plugged in right. And they did fix it, and a couple of days later they launched. But
well, I had just joined ABC as a correspondent. I'd been working for WNEW local radio in New York, and I had just gone to ABC days before the Apollo fire. And with Gus Grissom and Ed White and Chafee. And in fact, I was sent up to West Point to cover Ed White's funeral. And that was a...
That was tough.
That was very tough, not only because of the loss of three very fine and brave young men, but because of the pall that it just cast over the program, particularly in the minds of civilians out there who thought, my gosh, you know, if we can't even protect our astronauts when they're sitting in a in the Apollo on the ground, what happens when we start shooting them off into space?
Yeah, we found out with Apollo 13
you know,
that space flight is by no means routine. Yeah. There are tremendous risks there, but, you know, to NASA's credit, they pulled it all together. They learned from the mistakes, and, of course, unfortunately, we've had several disasters since then.
They've had to relearn those things.
And
that's right.
We're you know, every day they're getting better, and it's never going to be as safe as, you know, walking down to the local grocery store.
No.
But there's always a risk involved. But the people that fly these, they accept those risks, and they do it anyway.
They're incredibly brave, and I think they're visionaries. And, you know, there's no way to eliminate risk from that kind of activity. But then you can't really eliminate all risk from life either, can you?
No, you can't.
You shouldn't.
No.
No, because with great risk comes great reward.
So let's shift gears.
Okay.
Spaceship One. Now you're looking at a whole different way of accomplishing the same mission as Mercury. Mm-hmm. Does that amaze you? It amazes me that I understand the entire crew is like 200 people to from end to end on the whole mission. That just blows me away.
Well, it is. It's fascinating. And I think these guys are going to make it. Because, you know, the Rattan brothers are pretty amazing themselves, and the team of people that has been assembled to make this happen. It's always exciting. I mean, if you think about it, and I'm sure you have, it's just a logical extension of what EAA is all about, the Experimental Aircraft Association. I mean, these guys have just moved it up a notch to the space level.
That they have, and they've done it. And the thing is, they've made it look easy. You know, you see Spaceship One, and you see the design and everything, and you're thinking, I could have done that. You know, obviously, there's a lot more to it. But these guys have really, they've done their homework, and they've made it look easy. That's the thing.
Well, I'm sure they spent quite a lot of time poring over NASA data of those who have gone before them.
Yes.
Absolutely. And Bert Rutan, who is famous for designing aircraft on napkins, probably went through a tractor trailer full of
them. Took a whole roll of paper towels to do White Knight 2.
Yeah. But and to see these ideas and dreams come to fruition, in my opinion, this is just as exciting as watching those first Mercury launches. We've just...
Yeah, as kids, we were glued to the television.
We were glued to the set. The space program, I was there.
Oh, yes.
You know, it was awesome to watch this stuff.
One of my earliest recollections is we went to the 1964 World's Fair, and we stood under a full-size mock-up of a Saturn V first stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still remember how big that thing was.
And going down to Washington Mall and seeing the F1 engines from the first stage of the Saturn V, and being down there at the Kennedy Space Center, actually looking at a full-scale, laying on its side, Saturn V. And I was on camera, the girlfriend is rolling, and I'm pointing, and I said, these are five of the most powerful engines ever built.
You know, when I first started covering space, and I went out and was introduced to the press site, and getting familiar with the location, and it was 3 miles from the launch pad, and I'm thinking, oh, gee, do we have to be that far away?
Yeah, you're not gonna
see
anything.
3 miles, what are we going to see? I'll tell you what, when that first Saturn went up, I was so happy to be 3 miles. I thought, gee, do we really want to be this close?
It had to be an awesome amount of thunder. It literally had to rattle your ribs.
Oh, it was incredible. A funny little anecdote. One morning, I don't remember which launch this was. It was one of the Apollos. And I'd gone to the restroom, you know, to make my last necessary stop before we all settled in for describing the launch, and I heard this, the door to one of the stalls being rattled, and I heard this grumpy voice behind the door, and I went over, and the door was stuck.
Oh,
and
geez.
This guy was obviously determined to get out. So I kind of lifted up on the door and helped get it open, and out walked Walter Cronkite. And he was just minutes away from, and he had come there for the same reason, of course. And
the thought running through his head is, we can build a rocket, but we can't build a bathroom
stall.
That's
right.
that actually works. Well, Mort, it's a pleasure to have you here. We could probably spend the rest of the day shooting the breeze with you about various and sundry things. But unfortunately,
you're really going to send me out into the rain, huh?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can hang out.
Yeah, you can hang out at the radio station.
Oh,
we don't
thanks.
Mind. Maybe we can learn a few things.
It's been
you.
Fun, and I'll keep listening to you guys.
All appreciate
right, thanks
that.
Thanks a lot.